Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Second hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this Friday, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Pierre LeBrun from The Athletic and TSN is going to kick off this hour. We always enjoy our conversations with him. Pierre, how you doing?
Well, as I like to say these days, as well as you can in this new world. Doing all right. Day 30, whatever, with the wife and kids in isolation and not complaining one bit. We got the easy part compared to other people in society.
Yeah, that's well said. You decided to put out and get the fans involved and just talk about how they feel about whether the league should resume play or not. We've admitted already in the first hour of the show, we were a little surprised at the numbers. You've got a lot of people participating. We thought it would be a little bit more lopsided, but were you surprised by the results to this point?
So I was surprised the other way. And part of that is that I pay attention to my mentions on Twitter and to the reader comments on the Athletic website. And for the past few weeks, as I've been updating people on what the league is thinking and the NHL Players Association about different scenarios, about potentially, resuming the season this summer, there was a lot of pushback from readers and from people following me on Twitter about, how can you guys even, how can the league even think about playing hockey when all this is happening? And listen, often the angrier people might be louder. So I decided to do a poll, and it was just over 24 hours on Wednesday. I asked a very simple question: are you in favor of the season resuming this summer, likely without fans in the arenas? Yes or no? And the yes was 59%, and the no was 41%. And frankly, I thought it'd be closer to 50-50. 62,000 people responded, by the way, I should note. So it's not just a drop in the bucket. 62,000 is 62,000 people in both the U.S. and Canada, in a lot of different markets, I could tell. Now, the survey in itself is skewered because, of course, people who follow me on Twitter or read me in The Athletic are obviously sports fans and most of them hockey fans. So it's not like I've asked society at large. I've asked hockey fans, right? But, 4 out of 10 are against it, and there are all kinds of different reasons. I mean, some because they're just worried about, sports playing a part in extending or aggravating the pandemic. Other ones because they feel that if there's a four-month break, how can you, it's a sham to resume again? It's an asterisk season, et cetera, et cetera. There were all kinds of reasons. But at the end of the day, out of 62,000 respondents, it was still a 59% yes vote as far as most hockey fans wanting the game to come back, the healing aspect of that, just sheer out missing it, and wanting the fact that 85% of the regular season has been played, wanting to have a champion, right, to end that. So interesting back and forth between the yes and no crowd, and I think a lot of good arguments made.
Yeah, see, that's kind of what I was thinking. That's why I thought it would be a lot higher, because it's just because of who you're talking about. People that are interested in your poll, people that read your stuff on The Athletic, I just, we would just assume diehard hockey fans, and of course the numbers are good. It's just like we've put out the same thing here. We're on the, this is the Predators flagship station on radio, so you would expect the numbers to be skewed toward, of course, we talk to a lot of diehard hockey and Predators fans every day, so you would expect the numbers to be skewed one way. That's why I said I was a little surprised that 41% came in with no.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting.
A lot of them, obviously, and a lot of them, when I looked at their Twitter answers, not just the vote, but a lot of people took the time to, to tweet back, and some of them were in my article today in The Athletic. A lot of them say they're diehard hockey fans, but they're concerned about what's going on right now with the pandemic, or they're concerned that 4 months off will mean bad hockey, or they're concerned about the players' safety in terms of getting injured after jumping into a a playoff after not playing for 4 months. There are a lot of interesting reasons why the no crowd didn't feel right about it. And I don't know that there's an easy answer. I mean, you know, it was pointed out by one responder that, hey, you know, in 2012-2013, the Blackhawks won the Cup after a 48-game season, a shortened season due to that lockout, to the NHL lockout. And no one looks back and thinks that the Blackhawks have an asterisk on that title. And that's right. I don't think none of us do. But again, I would suggest the difference is the 48 games were played continuously once it finally started and went right into a playoff. There was no interruption, right?
Yeah.
From that perspective. So, we all have self-interest in what we do for a living to have hockey back. But I will admit myself to having some pause as far as, you know, what it would look like with no fans in the stands. I mean, one former player reached out to me and said, imagine when they award the Cup, the fans are still not back in the arena. You know, they award the Cup, let's say, on August 30th. Nashville Predators win the Stanley Cup. Roman Josi grabs the puck, and the arena is empty. I mean, grabs the cup over his shoulders, raises it. He's happy. The Predators players are delirious in happiness. You guys are happy. But there's no one in the stands. I mean, what the former player was saying is, like, what will that feel like? Interesting.
And what about the parade that we've always talked about, guys? There would be no parade. That would be weird, right?
No parade.
No. So
yeah, it may not be parades for a long time.
No, you're right about that. We had Shea Weber on the show yesterday. We had a really good conversation with him yesterday, Pierre. How do you think? You brought up some really good points that obviously some of your readers have brought up and you've made as well. Like, the longer this goes on, the longer they just sit. We had Julie Turris on this week, Kyle Turris's wife, and, you know, players are scattered all over the place. She talked about the Ekholms are over in Sweden, and, you know, the Predators have a lot of players from Europe. So does every team in the league. So how do you monitor that? How do you do that when they've been away for months and they're in maybe countries like Sweden that have more laxed rules on the pandemic?
Yeah.
So where do you stand on all that?
Yeah. I was just going to say, you brought up a very interesting situation with Sweden. Of course, a lot of Swedish NHL players, a lot of them went home. And because of the lax position that the Swedish government took, and they're able to skate. I think some of those Swedish players are probably skating, whereas the rest of the NHL isn't. I mean, that was a big concern that both Justin Williams of the Carolina Hurricanes and Taylor Hall of the New Jersey Devils brought up with me this week, that you're working out at home in self-isolation. Nothing can replace a skating stride. There's nothing like a skating stride. You have to be on the ice to skate. And so, yeah, everyone's staying in shape and doing what they can to stay in shape, but to be off the ice now for 5 weeks, and it's going to be more than 5 weeks a lot of these players based in North America, at least, are off the ice, that you're going to need time to ramp it up again if we receive, you know, like, and you're going to need time on the ice. And when the NHL put out their original plan to players and teams back on March 13th in a memo, it was based in three phases. Phase one was self-quarantine until further notice, and which we're still in. We're still in phase one. And that phase one was the self-quarantine was extended through April 30th recently by the NHL. Phase two, whenever that is freeing up the process so that players can start showing up to team facilities and skating in small groups. That's going to be huge for players. Like, they cannot wait for that phase to open up. And by the way, I don't know if it'll open up everywhere at the same time. I mean, that'll be the other interesting thing. So, you know, the burning desire and necessity for NHL players to be able to skate again is huge as this goes on, which is why if the league does have a season in July and August, you know, you need some form of training camp. You need some form of exhibition games, I think. And possibly some regular season games before you jump into a playoff. And you guys know, Predators are always in the playoffs. The level of intensity and physicality in the first round of the playoffs is, I don't even know how to describe it compared to other sports. It's like a different sport explodes in April every year. You can't just drop the players in that after 4 months off. They need to be able to ramp up skating-wise and physically before then. And finally, I'm sorry I'm rambling so long here, but the players coming back from Europe have to be quarantined for a couple of weeks before they can integrate themselves with the rest of their team. So that's another layer, time-wise, to all of this logistical planning that you have to take into account.
We're talking to Pierre LeBrun from The Athletic. Great poll. 62,000 responses on people's feelings about playing the Stanley Cup playoffs in front of no fans. So, Pierre, you had some great feedback. You've hit on a lot of things, and I want to ask you one or two more specific about it. But I don't know if there's any way for you to track it. But did you get any kind of sense of the Canadian opinion as opposed to the U.S. opinion when you did your poll? What's the breakdown there?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're getting to, obviously, is hockey is Canada's favorite sport and pastime. It's a religion up here. But I didn't sense that Canadians were pushing more for the return than any of the U.S. hockey fans. I think the U.S. hockey fans are absolute diehard and love their teams. Where I think I saw any kind of trend, and again, I guess it's anecdotal, but where I think I saw a trend was more along the lines of fans of teams who have no chance of making the playoffs compared to fans whose teams have a shot to win. And you can see why. I think that fans on the lower ceiling teams, on the teams that are out of it, don't really understand the upside of their teams coming back to play maybe 6 or 8 games and then calling it quits again, right? In terms of a very short season resumption.
With that in mind, do you think that would be the sentiment of a lot of those teams themselves, the personnel, not only the players, but the front office, the scouts, saying, you know what, this is probably better, let's just sit this one out, where maybe that directs the league more towards just the teams, maybe just 16 teams. But what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, that's something I think the league internally is grappling with, right? I have to hide the identity of this team, but I did talk to a non-playoff team who said, I'm not bringing back my number one goalie or my number one defenseman for 6 games after 4 months off. I'm just going to tell those guys to stay home. I don't want to risk injury. For that team, it's all about getting ready for next year. So that was an interesting response. And I don't know really if you could pull that off anyway, whatever the rules are. But on the other hand, Ottawa Senators GM Pierre Dorion, his team is, 29th or 30th. He's been pretty expressive publicly about wanting to come back and play and being part of things. And I think from his perspective, it's whatever amount of games Ottawa can still play, it's another chance to evaluate all the young guys they have. They're rebuilding, right? They're a very, very young team. They got 2 picks coming up in the draft lottery. So for him, every game they can still squeeze in is valuable evaluation. So it depends. I guess it depends on the vantage point of which team you're talking about. If it was down to me, I think what I would do is I'd probably take the top 22 or 24 teams, have some form of regular season resumption among those teams. And so you'd basically have to recreate a schedule for 2 or 3 weeks for that. That would do a couple things. It would only involve the teams that still have a shot. It would allow players after a mini camp and perhaps an exhibition game or two to get more games in before the playoffs, so to ramp up their stamina. And it would democratically decide the field of 16, right? Everyone will have hopefully played the same number of games by the end of this process, and then you decide who makes the playoffs. And that also allows the draft lottery, which is always very contentious, to be decided naturally too, the teams that don't make it. That's, I think, what I would do. I think the plan right now, last I checked, is still to involve all 31 teams if there's time in a season resumption.
Talking to Pierre LeBrun from The Athletic and TSN, and one thing that we've discussed on the show with all these scenarios, what happens if it's a player that nobody really knows, and I think it has a different effect than, let's say, Connor McDavid goes, you know what, I'm not doing this. I just, there's too much risk involved. I don't want to go play in one of these, scenarios that's been thrown out. I'm out. I'm going to sit this one out. What happens then?
Uh-huh. I mean, I think that's going to be something to monitor for all sports, right? Don't you think?
Absolutely.
I think that's what I'm finding interesting is, I guess the PGA's first on the clock, right? I mean, sounds like they intend to play without fans in June is what they announced. And let's see how that plays out. Let's see if everyone returns. And, of course, the PGA Tour is different because they're essentially individual contractors who can decide which week they're playing or not, right? Right. But still, I think you'll see some trends there. You know, you're bang on. I mean, so far, Drew Doughty has really been the only high-profile NHL player to come out and say, you know, I don't know about all this. And I don't know that it was really the fact that he thought it was dumb. I think he just was looking at the world around him and saying, are we really going to play this summer? And it, you know, you guys have been around Drew Doughty. He's pretty unfiltered. And was just giving his opinion. Most other players have been pretty standard in saying that they'd like to play again if it's safe. That's been the standard answer that we've heard. But there's a lot to digest here, and I can tell you from talking to someone at the NHLPA yesterday, I mean, the Players Association, yes, there's a huge financial component to all this, but the number one priority from their perspective is making sure that if there is a season resumption, that it is safe on all kinds of levels for the players. Safe in terms of where they are physically, but safe too between them and their families in terms of where we are with this pandemic and what steps are being taken to, you know, make sure that it's a safe environment, right? So the PA is all over that, and that'll play a big part in what happens here, no question. I think what really, going back to the non-playoff teams, I think there's probably a better chance of a high-profile player on a non-playoff team saying, you know, my team is 28th. Why? I'm not doing this, you know?
Yeah, and obviously that's going to have a different response too. But if it's a player that's on a playoff team, that I could see that being something that is discussed. David Poile did a Zoom press conference yesterday with the media, and one thing that was brought up with him was the salary cap and how the salary cap could be affected by all of this. What are your thoughts on that?
Yes, and I'm sure David, like all his other GM colleagues, I know from talking to other GMs, this is a huge part of when they think hockey as opposed to what's going on in real life. And it's gigantic, and it affects the players and the owners alike. I think there's no other way to look at this but to think that this is going to have a profound economic impact on the NHL business, regardless of what happens from here on in. There's a lot of money lost. And the reality is, if the NHL and the NHLPA were going by the current rules in the CBA to decide the salary cap for next year, the cap would go down big time. But they're not going to do that. Bill Daly of the NHL and Don Ophir, the head of the NHLPA, have both been on my podcast over the past month, and both said that they're obviously, the two sides are going to just have to have a side agreement, go outside the system and decide what the best cap number is for everyone involved. So that's important to point out. I mean, they're just basically going to have to pick a number that makes sense, right? Because you can't have a cap that goes down $10 million because some teams won't be able to put more than 16 players on the ice. Or in a starting lineup, right? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. On the other hand, the revenues are going to get clobbered over the next year or two. And so you're going to end up probably with a salary cap that is higher than what the actual business model suggests it should be. So this is a lot to grasp, right? It's a lot to sort of get your head around. And I want to bore our listeners to death, but the number one issue for players is escrow. In other words, you know, they're already having gotten paid this year more than their 50% share of the pie. The fact that the league continued to, the teams continued to pay the players after the season was stopped 2.5 more paychecks when the revenue stopped for teams, the math isn't going to compute, right? The system is set up where it's 50-50 every year, that the players and the owners share 50-50 in the revenues. Well, it's not going to be 50-50. So the players are going to owe money. So with that in mind, you know, what is a salary cap number that makes sense that you know, everyone can live with? And I think what you'll probably see happen, although no one has confirmed this or even intimated that anything's decided yet, because this is a little further down the road, I think they'll just freeze a salary cap probably at around where it is now for the next couple of years at 81.5 or around there.
I feel like I'm back at Disney last summer with my 8-year-old on those interactive rides. I get dizzy just thinking about all these things. Fascinating stuff. That's what they're talking about. And gosh, I don't know how they're going to come up with solutions to everything you just laid out there. That was a lot to chew on and all 100% true. Really good stuff, Pierre. Thanks for joining us. Continue to be safe, and we'll talk to you down the road.
All right. Sounds great, guys. I always enjoy coming on. Nashville is one of my favorite spots in the league, and I know that I'll be overjoyed the next time I'm there because it'll mean that we'll be back in some form of normalcy. So all the best to everyone.
As will we. Thank you, Pierre LeBrun from The Athletic. Go check out his article, polling the fans. Over 62,000 people weighed in, 59% said yes. There is a lot to chew on from that interview, and we will come back and discuss some of it. On the other side, Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase on this Friday morning, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Man, John Ciambi in the first hour, Pierre LeBrun in the second hour. Good stuff from them, and it looks like there's some news out there that was I was seeing on Twitter. Willie, I'll turn things over to you on old Big Buff up in the peg.
Yeah. You know, it's so crazy to go back and think about this. You got to get your wheels turning to some of the things that were going on before. But as most of you know, Dustin Byfuglien, the mystery of Dustin Byfuglien going back to the beginning of the season, has been lingering over the Jets franchise for a long time, where he basically showed up and said, I need a break. I don't want to play. Don't have the desire. Haven't healed up. My body aches. It's a little bit of the Andrew Luck in some ways. And so that has been lingering with the Jets for a long time. And today of all days, I'm not sure what the timing was. I haven't read into it yet. But they have parted ways with Dustin Byfuglien. So they've terminated the contract. And in theory, he could go sign with anybody at this point. But I think the Jets are pretty sure that he has no desire to play. I was reading John Shannon's tweet here. And numerous sources suggest Byfuglien's NHL career is over. He has no interest in playing. That's John Shannon, who covers the league. He actually did cover the league for a long time with Sportsnet, but I guess he's more of a freelancer right now, but a very trusted source for sure. So this is interesting because when we were in Winnipeg recently, in fact, there were two trips to Winnipeg. It looked like the first time the Predators went through there, it was the day, and we just showed the replay of this game on Fox Sports Tennessee not long ago, UC Soros shutout. It was the first game that Soros started under John Shannon and started the great run that he was on up until the season paused. The big story there was they looked like they were on the verge, the Jets were, of terminating the contract then, which would have opened up a lot of cap space for them to make another trade or two. But it didn't happen. The Jets did not load up. They made a couple of minimal moves to get some role players, which helped them. But I wonder if the Jets, would it have been worth another point or two in the standings had they been able to pull this off back then in February, early February or late January, because the Jets are sitting there right in the bubble of the playoffs, and who knows where it's going, like we just talked about. If the season does resume, the Jets are right on the bubble.
He, from everything I'm reading, and by the way, Pierre LeBrun literally got off with us and then put a tweet out. He is saying that he's already checked with the league and has confirmed with the league that Dustin Byfuglien cannot sign with the team for the rest of this season. So that is not an option, even though he is out there. The earliest he can sign is next season. And from everything I've read, it looks like also Dustin Byfuglien is walking away from $14 million.
Wow. I would love to... he might break a silence at some point.
This season and next.
I would love to know, you know, what's kind of going through his mind. What's up with that decision? I mean, if he just doesn't have the desire anymore, okay, that's one thing. But that's a lot of money to walk away from.
Well, I think it's more his body. I think he's just done physically. I think his body has taken a toll. I mean, think about his style of play and his body's taken a beating. And I kind of feel like that's it. I don't think we're going to see Dustin Byfuglien again. I would be surprised that if he would come back. I mean, how old is Byfuglien?
Oh,
34, I think.
Oh, okay. He's a little bit younger than I thought. I thought he was more like 36. He's 34.
Dustin Byfuglien is
35. Okay, so right in the middle.
Yep.
When does he turn 36?
He just turned 35, March 27th.
Okay. So. Yeah, I thought I remembered that right. All right, so $14 million is $14 million, though, man.
No doubt.
Sure.
He'll never get that back. Not unless he wins the lottery.
He's made money. He's made quite a bit of money in his career.
He has.
So,
hey, if you don't want to play, you don't want to play. The question would be, does he at some point wake up one day and say, oh, you know what? My batteries are recharged. I want to come back. I mean, there's been plenty of athletes through the years that have had that moment for whatever reason.
Yep.
And so that's when the Jets are going to have to say, oh, well, we were afraid of that. But that's what they have to deal with right now. They just don't want to play the waiting game anymore, because what could happen if he does that is he could become a pretty good bargain pickup for somebody.
Yeah.
In theory.
And you just think about his career. I mean, he's played forward and defense. I mean, he's been a versatile guy. You mentioned the physicality that he plays with. I mean, there's a chance that could happen, because you've seen it time and time again where a player retires and then they come back, or they, you know, they really dial it back, go play overseas, and then decide they want to make one more run at the NHL. But everything that I've seen and we've talked about all this season, I don't see that happening with him. I just think he truly is done, but you never know.
So there was a lot to chew right on with our conversation with Pierre LeBrun. Where do we want to start? I thought the end there at the end was pretty fascinating, because that there is a whole lot of truth to that.
Because I have a question based off of that.
Okay.
That was making me think with the salary cap. You know, one thing that we have seen in the NHL, but in other leagues, that there have been front office people or employees with the team that it's come out they've taken pay cuts, that they're whatever percentage, you know, they're dialing back on their salaries until all this is over. I understand it would be a much more of a process, but at what point does the NHLPA have to have a conversation, or the league has to have a conversation with the PA of, are the players willing to take some sort of a cut, pay cut, you know, with this temporarily, we'll make it up somewhere else. But is that a conversation that either is happening or will happen at some point in the future?
I don't know how they escape that. How do they escape that? I mean, think about what he just said. I mean, you don't think that teams are going to want to recoup that? I mean, they've paid out more money than they made, right? It wasn't a 50-50 split, as Pierre was talking about. The players continued to get paid, what did he say, three more checks after everything has stopped? And if they don't come back and finish, then it wasn't a 50-50 split. So there's going to be a lot of teams and organizations are going to want somehow to recoup that money. And here's the deal, as we've talked about. Okay, for everything that is canceled, and I don't know how this is going to play out. Let's say just right now, the regular season. Now, they don't play that. Okay, so that's already millions and millions and millions lost already. And if we dare talk about, they just decide, you know what, let's scrap this year. We'll just start fresh with a 2020-21 season and go from there. There's no way. How could you possibly, even if Bill Daly is telling Pierre, you got to keep, you know, we have to keep the salary cap the same or whatever. You can't, right? There's no way. How do you do that?
It's got to balance itself out somehow,
right?
For sure.
You can't just say, well,
you would only be putting it off, right?
Hundreds of millions gone.
You might for a year be able to say, okay, this year is unusual, but you'd have to pay the piper big time the following year, right? Somewhere in there, you've lost all this revenue.
Exactly. Some point, it has to catch up. So how in the world? There's no way you go, well, it's just got to stay the same. No, that's impossible. No, it's not going to just stay the same. So How do you do that? Because he brings up a valid point. The easy thing to do is say, you know, we got to lower the salary cap by fill in the blank number, right? However millions that is. But then you're going to have teams like, excuse me, my hand is raised. I have a question. We did ours according to the old salary cap. What do you want me to do with my payroll? We're way over the cap now. What do we do? Do you want us just to trade away some of our star players or cut players just because now we don't meet the cap?
How do you do that? You would have to make some adjustments to give teams time to comply and adapt to the circumstances. But all of this to say, and if you look at Pierre's article, he's got some rough estimates of how much money could be recouped if you could play the Stanley Cup playoffs, right? And it's hundreds of millions of dollars. You know, he said maybe $300 to $400 million. He had some people tell him that might be a little bit high. But that's why I think, Chase, to your point, unless they're reckless about it, I think the players are going to have to suck it up, right? Even though it's not going to be ideal, there's a lot of flaws, right? You think about, you're taking all this time off, you're trying to ratchet back up, and then all of a sudden the games mean everything. That's not ideal at all, but I think it's worth, you know, doing it to recapture the revenue, right, for the good of all the players.
Yeah, you have to think of the future of the league. I mean, it's because eventually, all right, if let's say the players are like, no, we're not going to do that, we're going to just stay status quo, it's going to catch up to them eventually. But if you get in front of it now and you take the proper steps now, then in the future you don't feel it. And I think that's what a lot of – it's not just, you know, sports. That's what a lot of companies are doing. They're trying to if we stop the bleeding now, it won't be as much. Hopefully that's the idea in the future. So, you know, I think that the players have to look at it that way. It's not just the NHL. It's all sports. They have to look at it that way of let's do what we can now to save the future.
What can they do now?
Well, I'm talking about, you know, going ahead and getting in a room and having the discussion over, okay, well, you know, we're willing to take a cut by 15%, 10%, 20%, whatever the number they come up with, and go ahead and have that conversation now and have a plan in place.
Is it across the board, everybody, or does everybody get different cuts?
That's a good question. That's a good question.
For everybody?
I think that's a very good question. Do you look at bigger contracts and say, hey, you know, you're going to have to take a bigger one than as opposed to, you know, rookie deals? That's a good question.
Tough call.
By the way, nobody's getting in a room right now.
Well, Zoom call. getting in a Zoom. How about that?
We're so used to that language, right? Let's get in a room. Well, you know, not actually.
Let's get on a Zoom.
Yeah, get on a Zoom. That'll be our new language. Zoom call today? Anybody up for Zoom?
The next generation, we're not going to know how to talk to you. Or the next generation won't know how to talk to people. They won't know how to talk to each other.
They don't already.
Yeah, exactly. It's just going to get worse.
Well,
Hang on, let me get behind my camera.
Yeah, but at least Zoom forces you to look at people.
Yeah, and FaceTime.
Looking at your phone is not looking at anybody.
Did you guys ever really use FaceTime before?
I did.
A little bit, not much.
Yeah, I didn't
obviously
use it much.
Use it a lot more now.
Right, and it's an adjustment for me. Because number one, like I've told some people this, I don't love to talk on the phone anyway because, I mean, I talk all the time. So there are times that I just – like I make it quick, and that's just me. I'm so used to texting. I think that's my generation probably, but I've obviously changed my way of thinking during all this. So I've been on the phone a lot more, been using FaceTime a lot more. And I was thinking about it last night of I've used FaceTime more during this than I think I ever have in my life.
Yeah.
Even though it's available, I just don't.
Yep. Me too. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I wasn't really, that's not like I just wasn't a FaceTime person, but
you're a
no
phone
doubt.
Guy. You talk, I mean, you and
oh,
I,
I'm on, yeah, on the phone. Phone all the time. Yeah. That hasn't changed.
Yeah.
But there's been a little
I use
bit.
It a lot from the road.
Really?
So that's, yeah. So it hasn't changed
that makes
too much
sense.
For me.
That makes sense. All right. We'll come back. You just made the list at noon. Dr. Peter Cobb at 12:30. Those are some things on tap in the third hour of the program. Right now, I want to talk to you about USS, United Structural Systems, a foundation repair and waterproofing company that has been serving our area here in Middle Tennessee for a long time, about since 1994. And I know I'm talking to a lot of homeowners out there, and they have a lot of satisfied homeowners, more than 18,000 satisfied residential customers. And if you've been out in your yard or doing some home projects around the house, which a lot of us are doing in the quarantine time, maybe you've noticed some bricks that are cracking outside, or maybe you've noticed some walls that are bowing. You've probably been opening and closing your doors and your windows a lot more these days as it's a nice day like today, or when it's cold, you got to shut everything. And you've noticed maybe they've been sticking, or drywall that's separating, or maybe you got stair step cracks in masonry mortar joints, or maybe a chimney is tilting or leaning. These are all signs. There's a whole list, but these are just some of the signs that maybe your house is trying to tell you something. And these are projects, I would say most everybody out there, you don't want to be tackling these projects. Let the experts do that. That's where USS comes into play. They're going to come out and assess the situation, tell you whether you need to do anything about it or not. And if you do, they'll give you a free estimate. They're locally owned, they're licensed and insured, and they believe in their quality of work and their reputation and the integrity of USS. And right now, if you need them out to your house, call this number, 615-227-2275. That's 227-2275. Or you can always check them out on their website, usstn.com. And as they say, we guarantee our best. Call USS.
Donick and Chase, coming up, you just made the list at noon. And don't forget, we're going to have trivia at 1 o'clock. And so we want to make sure we plant the seed in your mind right now.
Participation, Willie.
Yeah, be ready to join us at 1 o'clock. We'll have real prizes.
I have a special surprise that I will bust out later.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's update you on a couple of things. The poll that we put out there, where we asked you, the listeners, to weigh in, echoing the poll that Pierre LeBrun did in his fan survey, he had over 62,000 responses in The Athletic, and that is, if the NHL can come back this summer, even without fans, are you in favor of resuming the season? And his poll was 59-41 yes, which surprised all three of us, I think. Our poll, and we've had it up for, you know, getting close to 2 hours now, and ours is a little more skewed towards yes, award the Stanley Cup, 78% to 22%. And that's about what I thought it would be, Chase, but
yeah.
I think what Pierre said in his interview with us that separates maybe our fan base here in Nashville is you've got a team that still has a chance, right, to compete. I think if you took the cross-section of fans of teams who were out of it, let's just say the Predators were way out of it. Let's say they were, you know, they weren't going anywhere. They were 14th in a conference of 15. It was all about where the draft was position was going to be. Are they going to win the lottery? If they were in that place, I think our vote would be way, way different. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that that's why you're getting it kind of skewed on our end. By the way, Dustin Byfuglien's wife has tweeted out. I just saw that coming across.
What does that mean?
She said, after 8 years of playing for Winnipeg, this chapter of our life comes to a close. I have nothing but gratitude towards the Jets for an amazing 8 years in Winnipeg. What an awesome experience it has been. And it's a link to Instagram. So I just thought that was interesting. Making it official, I guess.
What a surreal day to have a press conference and have all this be put out there. Very odd. By the way, result of another poll is in, guys. You'll be happy to know, and I thank you for your support.
I retweeted.
I believe I have advanced in the second round of the high school bracket.
When I voted, you were like up 96% when I voted.
Yeah, it was pretty lopsided.
He's still up 96%.
Yeah, well, it's over now. It's in the books, I think, at this point. And you have to add up the Instagram and Facebook votes as well, but it won't come close. So, job well done. I've moved into the Sweet 16.
And I've gone through and looked at the vote totals. You doing what you do has definitely helped.
Big time.
Your poll has definitely got more participation.
Well, I got to tell you, the first round, I'm playing the 16 seed, whose dad I grew up knowing very, very well. But he and his brother, there were two brothers, and they combined had a pretty good social media following. So I had to work a lot harder for votes in the first round just to get past the 16. This one was not nearly as tough. But you're right. This is going to help me. And there's going to become a point where I don't really think I should win. If I'm going up against certain players in the field, they should win, right? I shouldn't be better just because I have a Twitter following and they don't.
That's life, Willie. It stinks for some people.
That's life.
You got a radio show, the title. They don't. That's
what you're saying.
Works,
go for
man.
The title. If it's me yes. and Austin, yeah. Austin you, Rivers, who yes. is still in the NBA and won two state championships and is the all-time leading scorer, you're saying I yeah, should get my Twitter followers. To
I don't
for
think
me?
You're going
to
beat Austin Rivers. So use what you have.
Well, it depends on if he gets his following, yeah. And he gets on the radar. I wonder what will happen at that point. That'll be interesting. I might have to do what Matt Frege did: just get excited, or John Jenkins, like get people excited just to get 20%. The vote, so it looks respectable.
Why would anyone look at anyone less for using a platform or getting involved and trying to, you know, push people their way? Isn't that how voting works? Isn't that how every candidate that's up for anything that requires a vote, isn't that what they do? They push people to try to vote for them? I mean, that's yeah. that's how it works.
Yep.
It's not like you're doing things in Ozark, right? It's not like you're doing shady things behind the scenes. It's not like you're making dirty deals behind the scenes. You're just asking people to vote for you. You're not Marty Bird. Come on. Or
well,
Wendy
we're
Bird.
Still okay. For a couple more rounds, I feel justified in using the following.
I don't understand.
When we get to the final four, we'll have to take a look. Okay. Well,
I don't understand. I mean, you got to do what you got to do, man. There's nothing wrong with it.
Got to play the
you're
game.
You're a one really. Seed. You're acting like you're a 15 seed.
Right. No, I have no problem beating all of the non-one seeds, but there's a couple of other one seeds that I would feel a little guilty voting for myself over. Maybe I'll just not vote for myself again if I face one of those guys.
Just don't vote for yourself and just ask for votes.
Okay.
I mean, come on. Let's talk a little bit before we wrap up this hour and we get into You Just Made the List about this college football discussion that has been hot and heavy over the last
Ooh, boy.
48 hours. I mean, hot and heavy. What, you know, it's just this is no different. What we're doing now on this show is no different than, you know, what we were doing that first week where things were fluid and changing constantly. And so these things, we're allowed to reassess and we're allowed to think about things more because these are not normal topics. These are different topics. And so you're allowed to sit back and reflect and think about it a little bit more or talk to people, whatever you need to do in between shows. And you may come back with something different or something you would like to add. So with that being said, has anybody changed their mind or have differing thoughts from when we discussed it yesterday?
I heard Bruce Pearl talking today in an interview he did, and they played a clip of it on the Get Up show on ESPN, and they had everybody weighing in. And I'll tell you what, Marcus Spears got my wheels turning. He did make a good point. And, you know, the narrative that you're hearing a lot, and rightfully so, is the whole financial structure of the NCAA and all of the athletic program sports is contingent upon the football season being played, right? And so we know that. That's a given, right? All of the athletic teams rely on that revenue. That was Bruce Pearl's point. He said, "We 60%, 50% is just the gate revenue of our six or seven football games, whatever it is." So he says, "I'll do whatever I have to do. We've got to play the season, even if it's all the way back into the spring of next year." They talked about that extensively. But they got into a discussion about Trevor Lawrence and some players, and they made this point. They said, "If I were Trevor Lawrence, I wouldn't play in the spring. You're too close to your NFL, so a lot of top-level players might choose not to play if the games are pushed back into the spring." And that's fine. But Marcus Spears said this, too. He says, "It's interesting that these players who aren't compensated other than the scholarship," and that we can get into the philosophical discussion of that, because it's interesting that all these players have to maybe put their safety at risk for the financial well-being of so many others and not necessarily themselves. That's a really interesting point.
That's a very good point by him, and he doesn't hold back. And, we mentioned Bob Bowlsby, the commissioner of the Big 12 Conference, his comments on a conference call yesterday. He went on Golic and Wingo today and doubled down on that, basically said, that if they're not in school, if there aren't kids on the campus, then they're not playing sports. And that's kind of what they're looking at. Now, my question there is why could it not work that you quarantine, the football teams in a certain, like you have the SEC that they're just going to play conference games, or the Big 12, they're just going to play conference games and they're doing online classes. I think that's something that they could definitely look at. It might not be feasible. It might not be economical, and it might not be right for their health, but I do think that that's something that they should maybe explore. But it seems like the message coming from these leaders in college sports are, if they're not on campus, then we're not going to play. And Darren, you have brought up several times on the show that if that doesn't happen, then that's bad for other sports, because you're going to have all the sports that, I think you said, in the red, they go bye-bye. And I agree with that, and that's something they have to definitely keep in mind.
Okay, so let me ask you guys this. So, Willie, you bring up a valid question. Why should they? What Marcus Spears said. Why should they? Okay, that's more than fair. I want to know who's going to be one. Let me start here. How many student athletes do you think go to college in this country, and the only reason that they were able to go to college is because of a scholarship?
I would say that there are a lot that's the reason.
You say thousands?
Yes.
Upon thousands?
Absolutely.
Sure.
Right? Okay. So I've made it well known for a good while now on the show. You want to do the right thing. We know that. But if there's no college football, well, okay, anything in the red, it's an easy decision. It goes away. It's gone. Okay, so now who's going to be tasked with the job of going to every family and telling them, not only is your sport canceled and it's gone away, it's not postponed, it's canceled. It doesn't exist anymore. You now no longer have a scholarship, so you're now on the hook for $22,000 a year.
I think the point is those kids may be asked to do something for the greater good.
Right.
Right.
So what do you want?
A lot of other athletes.
You put yourself at risk?
That might help me make my decision. But Marcus was talking about not only, the health risk, perhaps, of mixing it up on a football field where the virus could get around and spread quickly, locker room and all that stuff. And this is under the scenario where you would play late February through April, and you would play maybe a shortened season, 8 games, and then have a playoff of some sort. Just play conference games only, I think, is being tossed around. Then turn around and play another season in the fall. All of that for the greater good is good. That might be the only way to do it and have fans in the stands.
How can you guarantee that there's going to be fans in the stands and you're going to be playing
anything
in February?
No, nobody's guaranteeing anything.
They're
saying that realistically that's your only shot. That's the earliest shot you're going to have in a lot of people's opinion that you could have fans in the stands.
But that seems like so unrealistic to think that February and March – you're going to have, unless there's a vaccine, there, how are we going to have fans in the stands in the cold and flu season?
You may not.
In the wintertime.
You may not. They won't do it if they can't do it. I'm just saying that that might be the earliest you could do it.
Yeah. I just think that I think every point is valid, and it's fair to talk about. But once again, I go back to the article that I meant to address yesterday. Philip Fulmer, the athletic director, this was in the Knoxville New Sentinel. Philip Fulmer, the AD at UT, went on Paul Feinbaum's show this year, and I asked you to not to look at this article, to look at the numbers. And he said basically what a football season is for the University of Tennessee fiscally. What, you know, what are the economics per year it means for the school and the program and athletics? Do you know what the number is that he threw out?
I don't off the top of my head, but I would imagine that it makes up.
I'm just asking you to throw out a number. What do you think it means? What does a college football season mean for the University of Tennessee?
Gross revenue?
Yeah, football, what it generates in revenue. This is going off the numbers over the last 5 years.
$250 million?
It's hundreds of millions.
Or is that
$2 million? It's $100.4 million.
$100.4 million.
Football alone. That accounts, and there have been other ADs at smaller schools that have said it's even more, but he said that accounts for, I'm going to get the exact number here. I think it was, I don't know why all of a sudden I can't, I think it was 67%. Like I said, there have been other ADs that said it's about 80%. A lot of schools have said 80%. I think Philip Fulmer, and I don't know why all of a sudden I don't see the exact number. I think it's about 67. There it is. 60. It is 67. Football revenue accounted for 67% of Tennessee's total athletic department revenue.
I was going to guess 70%, so I was close.
So I guess the point is, I'm saying, and I'll keep saying it, is that's fine. We can do that. It can not happen, because there's a real shot. If this is how we're going to do it, and we're going to do things the right way, and that's fine. But if it doesn't happen, okay, I want to just know who's going to be tasked with going to every one of those people and tell them, your sport doesn't exist, it's gone, you no longer have a scholarship. Sorry that you can't go to college anymore. I guess fill out your resume and go get a job.
Yeah. That's – look, and you're going to open Pandora's box even more. I mean, Nick Bosa, and there have been other players, you know, they've started things, and, you know, where they're not – you know, they're going to just not play because they want to preserve their bodies and everything for the draft. But if you play in February, if you play in the spring, you're going to have even more. Those numbers are going to be higher, and I don't – And I think that'll continue, because basically they're going to look at it as the only reason that I'm playing my junior or senior year is because I have to, you know, is because I, or the last year of eligibility before they can go to the NFL draft is basically because they're being told they have to. And that, I think that starts a completely different conversation. You know, if they move this to the spring, you're just going to have the numbers even higher.
Also, would we have to say that if they don't play college football until next spring, that basically means there's no college basketball season, correct?
Right. Yeah.
Which means no NCAA tournament again? Or would you maybe try to play a shortened season for college basketball from January through March? I don't know.
Willie,
I mean, there's all kinds of wheels
spinning. Unrealistic. It's unrealistic.
You're saying
none
with
of that
fans.
Happens. It's no. I'm saying they're done. College sports is done if they don't figure this out. Like, they can keep saying they want to play in front of fans, and we've got to do it in front of the fans, and maybe in the spring. If they don't have another – if there's not another college basketball season and they can't figure out this college football season, NCAA athletics is done. They're done. They don't survive this. So then it all goes away. Then what?
Well, you can't. I mean, you can't risk everybody's life to do that. I mean,
okay.
There's a.
So, but I'm just saying. Okay, then what? So, all those kids are no longer in school. There's no more sports programs. Then what?
What are you suggesting? I'm throwing out different scenarios that have been discussed. You're just shooting down every single thing that we're throwing out there. What are you suggesting?
I'm not shooting it down. I'm saying they need to pull their head out of their rears and stop acting like, oh, we only have to play in front of fans. Or else, you better start thinking a little bit more outside the box than that. Because for you to act like you can start up a season in February is, to me, just silly. And think everything's going to be fine then over September and October. You got a lot much better chance in September and October, in my opinion, than February and March.
Well,
with round two.
I don't disagree with you just based on what we know, but at the same time, I think you have to look at it as this is so ever evolving that we also don't know. We can know a whole lot more by December. You know, that we've learned that could say, February, you're going to be fine to do that.
You're playing roulette because you're right.
But we're playing roulette with everything.
We could have more answers by then and more solutions, but we're just spinning it, right? We're just spinning that chamber and hoping for the best.
But honestly, Darren, that's all they can do right now. I mean, we don't know. So, I think that's kind of the world that we're in of just, let's throw some plans out there. And, I would imagine that a lot of these leagues and the NCAA, they don't want these plans getting out. But that's, we know that there are no secrets anymore. So I think that they don't have the luxury of being able to have those closed Zoom meetings to discuss all these different scenarios without them getting out. That's what happens.
Yeah. We will come back third hour with You Just Made the List and Dr. Peter Cobb. Things on tap for the next hour here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.